is a test of the emergency broadcast system.
This is only a test.
DJ's in MC. This DJ, he gets it out.
Listen to the disc jockey's introduction to
two DJs in a mic with your host, DJ Mike.
Is that a timetable?
And DJ JP.
Well, get on it. It's your turn.
Give me the mic.
Oh yeah, you like that beat. That's a sick beat.
Yeah.
I was wondering is the producer and him appreciating that beat.
Wow. I need that one.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, before we got caught up into the beat, welcome to another episode of Two DJs and One Mic.
One mic.
With the infamous engineer, Jeffrey. Myself, well, DJ Mike.
I got about 10 names though.
Oh yeah.
Here you go.
Yes, and we're happy to be joined by the great Jalen Fryer.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
What an intro.
Welcome in.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yes.
Oh, yes. It's an honor, you know, to have you on the show. I know we've been working on it for months, you know, and finally we got him.
Yeah.
You know, it's, for me, I like having someone that's young in the industry on the show.
Am I the youngest so far?
Yeah, I think so.
25.
How old was the other guy that was a producer? He was pretty young too, yeah, but I think he's probably the youngest one that's been in the the hot seat.
Yeah. Okay. I'll take
you. Yeah. You are the youngest.
Cool.
Oh, who is that? Is that Logan?
Yeah, man.
That's Logan!
What's up, Logan?
Hey, Logan, you put together a great product. I saw that. I'm proud of you. We need to talk.
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to jump right into it. We ain't going to wait around. We ain't going to play around. We're going to jump right into it. Yes, thank you. Thank you, Logan. So, how did you get into DJing?
Wow. How did I get into DJing? Well, I was 14 years old, so this had to be probably 2013. I was a freshman in high school.
Uh-huh.
And Mike is actually the entire reason I got into DJing, if you can believe that. One day my stepdad came home. He was just like, hey, you know, we got this guy, Mike. He's a DJ in the area, and I think you should go to one of his gigs and just sit in with him and check it out, see if you like it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I think at that point in time, I really had no idea what a DJ was. I mean, I had heard of a DJ. Mm-hmm. I've never been to a party with the DJ. I don't think I've been to any weddings at that point in time. So, like, I was just like, sounds cool. I know they do stuff with music. So I was like, let me go and just check it out. And really, I think that was, not I think, that was definitely the turning point for everything in my life, because up until that point, I was very heavily focused on just academics, but extracurricularly, it was just basketball.
Oh, okay.
It was just like, you know, I'm gonna play basketball. And I think it's funny because my stepdad was like, you're not going to no NBA. You know what I'm saying?
we had talks about it. Like, man, Jalen with this basketball, do he not know that he's not tall enough?
But that, I mean, that was Muggsy. Well, there's Muggsy. There's other people that made it, man.
But that's just joking.
I got you.
But he was like, man, Jalen is so smart. He's so much smarter than that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he was right.
Yeah, no, he was definitely right. And quite funny enough, that was the reason why I stopped playing basketball, because it was like, this DJing thing is really cool.
So how long did you play? To high school? What did you play?
I played to my sophomore year in high school, so.
So that touches him. He played basketball. So
So that was whatever.
Anti basketball.
No. I'm definitely I love
the game. I'm just he's with the ball.
No, yes, that was my heart too. Yeah. I mean, I love basketball probably as much as I love DJing. So yeah, I played all the way, long time. But we, it's not about me, it's about you. So let's keep on going. So that's cool. So sophomore year, you decide to start DJing, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I want to say full time, but you know, I wasn't like exactly working or anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember everything about that first gig we went to. It was a prom at the W Hotel. You remember?
The W. Wow,
it yeah. sure was for Booker T.
Yeah. Wow. At the very top.
The Ghost Bar.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And you know, I walked in there and I helped you out with some of the equipment, setting it up. You're just showing me how things went because I had no idea where anything went. And yeah, man, I just sat down next to you. It was funny because you were up here standing here DJing, doing your thing. I was just a kid sitting in the chair, just, you know, watching, observing, asking questions, picking up on little things. But that was definitely one of the biggest turning points in my entire life because it was really awesome seeing you like work the room the way you did. Mm-hmm. And dictate the energy and really have fun with it as well. And I think that was the first time I had actually heard and paid attention to hearing two songs being played at the same time. That's just nuts.
Way back in 2013, Mike was doing that.
Oh yeah, yep. Back in the day.
Oh wow. Okay. But it's like a drug, man. Once you actually understand what it is and you hear it and you feel it, and then you can know and you can identify. Because my kids, they. Daddy, that look at listen to that one. Here comes this. So they understand it too. So once it gets in your soul, it's like you can never get rid of it. You just feel it, you know it, and it's just so cool when
yeah.
you see people when it's done correctly.
Yeah, it was a magical moment. I don't think I'll ever forget. But you know, from there, we just kept I don't really remember the next couple ones. I remember a few, but I just kept coming yeah. back and kept working some. We did some weddings, some birthday parties,
yeah,
you know, the
whole
Sweet
16.
Yeah.
We did a Sweet 16, and I remember I actually left for a little bit, and you got up.
Yeah, I do remember that. So that was the second one?
That was the second or third. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But the beautiful thing was Jalen was the easiest person for me to show how to mix. He picked it up like that.
Wow.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, like that. So I let him DJ to see.
Yeah.
You know, and he did his thing.
Oh, wow.
And it was his peer. So it was a Sweet 16.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah. It was right up my alley. And, you know, I knew.
So how long did you have to work before you actually learned? I mean, how long was that before you thought he was actually comfortable enough to go do it in public?
Well, he did some of the gigs with me, and he got his equipment and he just took off.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I mean, saying he was, I would say, he's a self-starter.
Yeah.
Some people you can show how to do something and they want to do it.
Yeah.
And they do everything else that's needed.
So right. You really did you come to Mike's house and take lessons or did you just get your stuff and at home and just say, like I did, get under the stairs and just practice every night until I had it down.
It's funny because it started off with just me, like I said, just going to gigs with him. I text him, hey, you got any gigs this weekend? He'd be like, yeah, pull up here at this time. And, you know, I'd be there. And again, he'd be sitting here DJing. I'd be sitting next to him watching, asking questions. And then he'd get up to go to the bathroom or something. And I just make sure the music didn't go off. I'd throw in a song
while
or two.
While Mike was running exactly. to the bathroom.
Exactly. And then, you know, sometimes I get a bit nervous. I'm like, okay, where is he at? Because I don't want to do the wrong thing. People come up asking me questions. Can I play this or do I know this? It's like,
yeah,
you know, I'm just here, just helping out till he gets back. But yeah, so at a certain point, you gave me a disc, back when we had software on discs with the virtual DJ on it. It was like a free download for virtual DJ. So I had this laptop at home. He was like, just practice on that. So, and I think you were working Serato at that time, but you gave me virtual DJ. So I took it to home to my little Acer laptop, popped it in, downloaded it back when laptops had, you know, discs on the side or disc holders, whatever. And then I was just doing everything virtually. I would literally scratch with the dang mouse and just like wait and try to beat match and then, you know, work from it from there. I would.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's really how I got my big start. And I know at a certain point, you took me, I think, to your parents' house, and we went in the garage, and you dug out some old equipment you had. It was a, It was a mixer. It was an American DJ mixer. It was a two channel.
Yeah, he showed me a picture of it.
I sent you the picture. Yeah, because I found it. But yeah, like some of the knobs were off. The fader was popped off. It was just a little stick. But yeah, I plugged that up to my laptop and had my headphones plugged into it, and I was just mixing. I was learning how to do the fader. I was learning how to work EQs and filters and stuff. And that's kind of where I had my start.
Wow.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So I guess I'll take this one. What was the biggest influence for you as a DJ?
Mike.
I knew that's why he put that question
no,
in.
There. Wasn't.
I really didn't want to ask it, but that's why he laid it over to me, gave me the second. But I'm going to cheat because the next one is probably for him too. So I'm going to take the next question. What influenced you to purchase your first controller?
Mike.
No.
The next three questions. Okay, yeah, all about Mike. Now, so really, what influenced you to make your first controller purchase?
Well, I knew that I couldn't just do gigs with a mixer. I would have to graduate to at least one table or one controller, or, uh-huh, you know, one side of something. So it's funny. So I obviously didn't have a job back then. I had to be around like 15 by this time. And every 2 weeks, my parents would give me $20 for lunch money, right? And I would take the lunch money. I would go to school. And I would put like half of it in, or I'd only put part of it in. And, you know, some days, you know, I didn't have money for food, obviously. So what I would do is I would do people's homework. I would buy candy outside of school, sell it at school. Me and my best friend, we used to sell Nike Elite socks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if you guys know, but people were buying socks for $100 back then.
Wow.
Basketball socks. So we were getting new releases and stuff like that, selling them on eBay. You know, eventually I worked up to a little over $100 because the DJ controller I wanted was that Pioneer DDJ SB. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think it was like $230 back then.
Yeah. Still about $230.
Okay. Yeah. So,
$49.
Yeah. My parents saw how hard and how dedicated I was because I was in that room with that mixer every night, downloading music off YouTube. I was introduced to a whole new genre back then. I didn't know what house music was.
Oh yeah.
I downloaded hundreds of songs of house music and I was just really vibing and getting into that space. But, long story short, yeah, that's how I ended up saving up to get money for a DJ controller. And then it's awesome. Cause my parents, like I said, my parents saw how hard I was working and they just surprised me with it. I didn't even end up paying for
all your sock money and hot candy money.
Yep. In the closet.
Yeah.
But yeah, they bought that for me. Cool. And that's how I got my first controller.
Wow. Mm. Okay, we'll give you the next one. I'm gonna see how much you're cheating.
So I know offline we was talking about, you know, kind of briefly talking about DJ names. So how did you come to your name that you chose for yourself?
Okay. Well, a lot of people might not know this now, especially people that just found me, but a lot of my older fans and people that have followed me throughout the years knew that my old name that I went by was DJ Vashon. Mm-hmm. And Vashon is my middle name.
Okay.
But trust me, I went months trying to figure out a name. You know, I couldn't. I was trying to come up like, because we were talking about like corny names or, you know, just DJ Mike Death or whatever. You know, I was trying to come up with, you know, cool random names to pick and, you know, I just couldn't find one. So, you know, my mom was like, why don't you just go by Vash or whatever? And I was like, you know, that'd be kind of cool. That's not a name you see every day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, then ended up just going by DJ Vashon. Even on my Letterman jacket from school, it says DJ Vashon on the back, which is pretty cool. But, yeah, I mean, it just landed on my name, I suppose. Couldn't come up with anything better.
No, that's good. It's unique and different. And if it means something to you or it carries a special meaning or something in your life, that's even better. Because one of my favorites is DJ Vice. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He out of Cali. Yeah, I love his name too. So simple, yeah, unique to you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we heard some.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So how did you get into DJing for national concerts, tours? I mean, well, you elevated quickly. So just take us through a little bit of what you did before you got to that point.
Yeah. I want to say I got lucky. And part of it was luck. I don't like.
No, it was hard work, brother, because you was in there mixing with a mouse.
That's the thing. You know, I think it's one of those things where it's like what's the saying, like preparation and opportunity.
What
is it? How's it go?
Don't ask us a quote.
Yeah, I can't.
It's late.
Hard work, remember it. Something like that. Yeah. You guys know what I mean. But it was just one of
our favorite. I give you ours is you say you're ready, but are you prepared?
Absolutely.
So when your opportunity came, you were ready and you were prepared.
Exactly. So my first solo gig that I got was with my church. Back then, my pastor, Pastor Ray, over at Converge Church, so back then, actually, we didn't have a building for the church. So all of our services we were doing at a movie theater.
Oh, wow.
So we would have the pastor and the band, everyone below the screen. We're using the movie screen for all the text and everything. And the whole congregation would just line up and sit in the movie seats. And we used three theaters. We had one for the main congregation, one for the youth group, and then one for the kids, like the toddlers and whatnot. So my pastor calls me up one day. He's like, hey, like, I heard you started DJing. Would you like to DJ for the youth group in the mornings? And I was like, yeah, that'd be really cool. That was my first time anyone had ever said, like, hey, like, I recognize your talent. I'd like you to come do something. You know, of course, I did it for free because, you know, I was really excited about it. It was my first time actually stepping out and doing my own thing like that. My stepdad had this big PV powered speaker. Twice the size of me. You know, I don't even know how I moved it. It was like double the size of me.
We know about those.
So, you know, I would wheel that up there, the second floor into the theater. And I didn't even have my controller at this time. I had the mixer and my laptop and this big speaker on this foldable table. And I was rocking that for a couple weeks until I got my controller and it was, you know, the same kind of setup. But yeah, I really got connected to the touring scene through a connection at that church because I started DJing for that church. And I was listening to one of y'all's rewinds a couple of days ago, or might have been the one recently, just talking about like doing gigs for free. You know, and that directly, you know, led me into that opportunity and really just all the other opportunities for the rest of my life. So yeah, to answer your question, how to connect there. He was basically doing a tour and he's like, hey, we need a DJ. You know, would you want to do it? I'm like, of course I would want to do it. So, you know, we went to this dance studio over in Frisco. It was a small little show, about like 200 people there. Got connected with a bunch of artists. Really a lot of people that would change my life for the better over the following years. And that was that first show. I believe that was in like November of 2015. So to set a timetable. Yeah, November. And then I got a text, I think in December, from the same guy. And he was like, hey, would you want to do a show in Richmond, Virginia, in Charlotte, North Carolina? You know, we'll pay you $500 and we'll pay for your flight and a place to sleep. And I was like,
sure.
Yeah, well, let me think about it. Like, nah. But yeah, no, it was, I was all for it. And, you know, I think that was the first time I'd ever left the state. You know, that was the first time that was the first time for a lot of things.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, like I said, all that hard time and all that preparation led to that one opportunity and me going through with that opportunity and actually creating value and doing a great job led me to being called back out. And again, and then from there, I went and did those two shows. And then, you know, they did a couple more the following month in Orlando and Fort Lauderdale. And then, you know,
so were you doing opening or just playing between sets or what?
All the above. I would definitely open and play music for the first hour. They were doing a lot of meet and greets. So this is one of those tours that was very social media heavy. A lot of like social media influencers were bubbling around that time. And that's where a group of social media influencers would travel the country and go meet a bunch of their fans and a bunch of the people that would follow them. But there was also, so you had like half of the group being influencers and the other half of the group being artists.
Okay.
So they would mix, you know, artists and these social media influencers and have them go on tour. So for the first like hour or two, they would be meet and greets and I would play music during the meet and greets and everyone would meet people, take pictures and whatnot. You know, people would come up to me, didn't know who I was, be like, oh, I'm with the DJ. Let me take a picture, you know?
Hey.
So yeah, I would play music opening. I would run the entire set or the whole entire set list for the day. So they would do skits. I would basically organize that. I would have the timestamps for everything that was supposed to happen. I would have everybody's music downloaded and in order. So I knew when to play it and whatnot. So I was responsible for playing everyone's music in the right order and mixing them together and even just getting the crowd hype on the mic. So I was really doing the most out of anybody during that show in terms of like the talent there, because I was up there for the entire show, 3 hours. You know, you'd have a kid come up, do like three songs for about 15 minutes and then get back off. You know, I was up there for 3 hours running it. So yeah, that's really how I got into it. And then I just took the opportunity and ran with
it. Cool.
So how did that help you with your confidence?
It did wonders for my confidence. Maybe a little bit too much. definitely too much.
But as a DJ, you got to have a little bit of ego. You got to.
Yeah, for sure. And I definitely thought I was a lot better than I actually was just because of the opportunity that I had. You know, I was good, don't get me wrong, but like I definitely had a very inflated ego at the time. Not to like a fault or anything like that, but looking back on it, I could tell like, hey, you know, I started falling off of why I got there in the first place. You know, I wasn't working as hard. I was like, I was very naive in the fact that I was like, because again, I was like 17 years old by this time and I was very young and I just thought to myself, it's only going to be up from here. You know, if I'm here now, it's like, where am I going to be at when I'm 20? Like, it's like, it's just, I was always forward looking, which is a good thing. But at the same time, you got to be realistic and be like, you can't fall off of the reason why you got here. You know, another big reason why that happened was because, again, I was around a lot of social media influencers. I remember the first show I did in Charlotte. I went from 800 followers to 4,000 in one night.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
On Instagram. And I was around, I was surrounded by these people that had hundreds of thousands of followers. I'd never been around people like that before, you know? So just being tagged in things, you know, being friends with these guys, rubbing elbows, being in spaces where I'd never been before, having girls scream at you and like know your name and, you know, like it's, I'd never been in that position before. And I mean, I'm sure y'all will know what that would do to a young guy away from home.
Oh, I can imagine.
Anyway,
getting paid, all his other friends are at Bahama Bucks or working at Starbucks. You know, I'm out here getting paid to go have fun and
you're on the stage.
So that was cool. I'm just saying, but the hard work paid off. That's what it was all about. The hard work definitely paid off.
Learned a lot of lessons.
And it's, you know, it's good because you see what the hard work could bring about.
Yeah.
And also you see what could happen if you lose sight of the vision or lose sight of yourself.
Or stop putting in the work.
I think that was it for me. Yeah. I think at that point I was like, I think I made it. Like, you know, I've gotten this good and this is what it's like. Like I'm getting paid to travel. At that time I was getting sponsorships from like apps and products. Like people would pay me.
See why you got the big head, but I mean, I understand, but you can get grounded quick because everything that's given can be taken away so quickly.
And I definitely learned that. But yeah, you know, I would get paid to stream on people's apps or they would pay me per follower I brought to their app. So, you know, I was getting checks, $800 checks just at home chilling, you know, and then I would get $250 a show just flying out and I would get flights paid for, food paid for, you know, travel paid for. So, you know, I was missing school.
So have you ever got did you ever get an agent during this time? Or
No, I was doing everything solo.
Mom and daddy wasn't looking into it.
No. They were just
Mike. You weren't trying to be of assistance.
Well, Jalen has always been a very intelligent person.
No, I'm not saying anything in that aspect. I'm just saying looking out for his, making sure he getting his fair cut.
Well, he had Ken for that.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I'm just saying he had what he needed to know what to do. It wasn't getting over.
Well, I'm not saying they getting over, but it sounds.
Well, I'm just saying it was. I'm glad to see that he came out of that on the right side.
Yeah, that too, because he could have came out big-headed and
so many things that go with that. You can just imagine.
I saw a lot of things.
You're seeing alcohol, drugs, sex. I'm just saying, you're seeing all kind of stuff.
Oh, so, yeah, definitely.
you know.
But that's good. I mean, that was cool. So did that die off and you had to go look for something else or what happened
there? Yeah. So that particular tour I was with lasted for about a year.
It's a long time to be on tour.
Yeah. And then from there, it wasn't like constant. So, yeah, I know. I mean, we would do like a weekend, 1 month. We did like probably like 3 to 5 shows a month. And, you know, I would miss probably a week or two of school at a time. But I would have to go and get all my stuff done early. I had to drop a couple of my AP classes because I couldn't focus on that and just traveling, you know. So I dropped and got into all the regular classes. And, you know, I was able to get those done very quickly. But yeah.
Yeah, you grew up quickly. Quickly. Hey, but that's good. I'm glad you got to that. Man, that's cool. I think if we would have ran into that, Mike, how would we have handled it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
I might be still in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, you probably, we might be.
I don't know. I'm just.
But everybody handles it differently.
Yeah, you
came out of it on the right side.
Oh, yeah. I just realized I didn't answer y'all's question. But after that tour ended, there were a couple other tours I had reached out and I did shows for. I did a couple parties, after parties for different events. And, you know, just being connected, because being involved in that industry and meeting all those people. I mean, you meet people, you know, you get connected, mm-hmm. and there's other opportunities. And
that's what you're supposed to do. That's what Mike is very good at. Very good at meeting people.
I'm going to meet a whole bunch of people in a couple of weeks.
When he should be doing a show, he's meeting people.
Hey, man, got a network.
But no, he's the king, brother. He really is. Yep. So that's really cool, especially at such a young age. So, man, definitely. It's only up from here, right?
Yeah. You know it.
So it's your turn to mine, Mike.
It's actually you. So go ahead.
So how did you get into music and then being an artist and producing? So did you just stop? You didn't stop DJing, I'm sure, but did you just slide into that? You say, I want to do something different with this? Or?
Well, during that time, you know, that tour fell off. I started doing a lot more local gigs. Mm-hmm. In the area, I was doing house parties. I actually did a couple weddings as well.
At 12.
Yeah, sure.
No, he was young. I mean, how old were you then? About 19?
No, I was still about 18. I was like 17, 18.
Can't even drink and doing somebody wed, man.
I love doing the parties, those house parties, though, because the hosts will get drunk. You know, you're supposed to be there from 7 to 11, and then they get drunk, and then they forget, and it's like 1 o'clock, and it's like, you know, I'm gonna need some money for that, you know, because I'll come up to them, I'll be like, hey, it's 11, man. It's 11 o'clock, and they'll be like, oh, no,
go ahead and stay.
Yeah, just stay, please stay a little bit longer.
So I know some of those were bad too, I'll though, stay. Didn't
they? Oh no, oh, I had nothing
they
to do.
They all went good.
Yeah, I had nothing to do.
They paid you. They did.
Oh no, they definitely did.
You stayed on your own.
Oh yeah.
You know, some of them try to pull that line. I didn't tell you to stay. Yes, you did.
Oh, some of them would just give it to me up front and be like, okay, well, I'll stay as long as you need me to for that amount, you know.
Cool.
But yeah, so I was doing a lot of stuff locally, and then actually one of my connects that I met touring hit me up. He was one of our tour managers, and he called me and he was like, hey, do you want to be a producer or learn how to produce music? I was like, sure, like that sounds cool, you know. Wow. And I think around that time, it's crazy because around that time, I was really into house music. I was really into EDM music. I was really into that space. And I was looking at all the artists in that EDM space that were DJs. And one thing that I noticed about each one of them was that they produced their own music.
Yeah.
You know, and I wanted to be where they were at. So I'm like, what am I missing? I don't have any music. So it was crazy how he hit me up around that time. So long story short, he flew to Dallas. Because he was trying to produce an album for an artist in New York, so he flew her down, and then another guy I met on tour, another producer artist from San Antonio, who he flew up here to Dallas, and we were just all working on this girl's album together. And I really knew nothing. I knew zero, absolute zero about production, and I learned everything from him directly. Wow. Studying him, you know, he would show me things. I downloaded Logic, and I just went in from there.
What kind of music did she do? R&B or
R&B? It was R&B.
Did it take off?
No, it actually never came out.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That sucks.
Yeah, but it was definitely a great learning experience. Dealing with artists in that studio setting, just learning. I'm never. How do I say it?
Just say it. We don't have a rating, sir.
No, you're good. But yeah, it's just one of those experiences that, you know, I never want to take back, or it's just one of those experiences that I wouldn't rather have another way. I think that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought you were trying to say it was wild, crazy.
Oh, you know. No. But yeah, I definitely had a lot of great experiences. But yeah, that was really my door, just my mentor there. And then, you know, we ended up working on several other projects together. And yeah, that's how I got into
Did you get any hits out of all of this work? Anybody you know that has had some or had it remixed or, you know, made a club or you played it in your sets?
You know, I did play a couple of unreleased songs in my sets, but in that point in time, you know, my manager at that time, the producer, he really believed in this album and he wanted to give it to an artist that would take it to the max, you know.
Okay.
With that first artist, things just didn't work out. Just with her, I mean, she didn't really want to release some of it, and you know, it's just kind of got dealing with artists, as you guys know.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then we just kept trying to take that album to different people, adding to it, taking to it, or taking songs away.
Never
came out. Wow. We must have taken that album to at least 8 or 9 different artists, you know.
So how, to me, that's crazy. So how do you get paid then? You just, I mean, are you're not making money because it's not.
I wasn't. He was really the one taking care of me.
Yeah.
Wow. He was like, hey, like, you know, I know things aren't ideal right now, but like, hey, just come. I got a place. Come kick. I'll teach you how to do this and we'll get this off the ground soon. You know, and I took to him and I believed in him for that. So that whole time. And again, during that time, I was doing gigs locally.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I was still in the area. I was still in the city doing gigs. And then that ultimately took both of us to LA. We ended up moving to LA because we were like, you know, we're not having any luck with these artists in Dallas. So let's just go to LA. So moved out there for a little over a year. This was in the summer of 2019. Worked with some artists out there. Again, just those next couple of years, I was just refining my craft, getting better each and every day. I was learning how to produce. I was learning how to engineer. I was learning how to make my mixes better. I was really just refining myself again for that next opportunity that I would take.
Let me ask you a question. So what's the difference between producing and engineering? Is engineering taking the product out? Well, you explain.
No, you're good. Producing is really a lot of things, but a lot of it encompasses composition, is like writing the actual notes and the chords and the chord progression, things of that nature, and the melody. And then it also involves like making the beat, doing drum kits, drum patterns and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
Engineering is more of the mixing side of things, where it's like, you know, trying to balance vocals with drums or bass or, you know, pianos, keys, strings. It's really mixing and making things sit right.
Okay.
And that's definitely a very tedious and a very underappreciated aspect of the music space, definitely. I believe.
It requires an ear.
Yes, absolutely. And recording as well. I mean, just the recording process, dealing with artists, trying to get them. And this is kind of where the line between producer and engineer kind of blurs. But really, you know, getting the best out of the artist in the studio. You know, that's a talent that, you know, I think is very underrated. It's like, you know, you need to know how to talk to an artist when she's very emotional and you know, you need to get this song done and you spent $300 on the studio time and she's in here crying. You know,
it's my God. You know why? We was watching the Grammys Sunday and you just look at everybody. Does everybody in the industry have to be a little different?
Absolutely. I think that's what makes them
unique,
create the art that we know and love. Yeah. I was just having this conversation the other day with someone.
Really?
Well, I'll say this to that.
Okay.
I think it's important because they are able to be comfortable in who they have become.
Okay. I give you that.
So many of us
who are not.
But are not, and we hide behind, you know, our insecurities.
We could have a whole show about that because I think it's the other way around. They become something that they're not hide
that
both ways.
That
you know,
too.
And the drugs and all of that other stuff.
That too. And, I agree.
Yeah. So we can have a whole show, but we're not. This is about Jalen. So,
okay. I agree.
I'm all for it, man.
Yeah. I know.
I love talking about stuff like this. I'll be here all night.
I know, but it's just
I'm just saying it's interesting though. Interesting, but I do I'm grateful to see people that are able to be themselves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
be comfortable and in it. Can.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we should be unapologetic when it comes to being ourselves.
Yeah.
And it's not our responsibility.
We had some deep conversations with some DJs we've interviewed that you would think or would be, you know, just whatever, whatever. And then they talked about their insecurities mm-hmm. and shyness. And I'm like, really? With all the talent that you have, you're shy. But, you know, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and thank you, Chris. We got Chris, one of the founders of
chiming in
Harvest of Sound in Boston.
Out of Boston.
Yes. Yep.
What's up, Chris?
So let me ask you. So did you work with anybody we know, or that you do any work in LA when you're out there with anybody?
As far as direct work, I had a session with
you can tell me who you know whatever.
I had a session with Paula Deonda one time.
Okay.
You know we. That song never came out. You know, I still have her vocals on a track that we did. But, you know, I met Drake Bell. Had a run-in with Rick Ross one time. I was actually out here in Dallas. Okay. But, very,
big,
very
big
brief.
Rick or Lil Rick?
Big Rick. Big Rick.
He got you.
It's
always got you.
Very brief and passive. But in terms of working with people, I haven't really. Actually, that's not true. But in terms of people, you guys would know that's probably about it. I've definitely worked with quite a few younger talent, you know.
Yeah, and they might do some one day. So I mean,
I've worked with people that have done stuff, but they're still kind of mm-hmm. under the radar. Like I have friends that have done Disney movies and things of that nature.
Okay,
just songs like that. They've had hits. Have you guys heard of Josh Levi?
I think I've heard that name.
Yeah, he's a really, really great up and coming R&B artist. You know, I had a couple of sessions with him. Reed Deming, you know, a couple guys been on X Factor, just kind of like.
Yeah, but I bet that's so cool. You know, they don't know who you are from Adam and you don't know them from Adam yet. So just to get in there and collaborate and try to create some magic.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of these guys that I mentioned, they're kind of people that I toured with and kind of grew up in the space so it's kind of one of those things.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, in terms of like well established, you know, I haven't really had too much run-ins yet.
So how was it making your first song and actually hearing someone listening to your songs? What was the emotion that created for you?
I'm not sure if there's a word for that emotion.
Things that make you go,
Yeah, it might be very similar to the feeling of you like hearing about me talking about like your influence on me. You know, it's just like one of those things where it's like, you know, you put a lot of hard work and effort into something, and just to see it grow into more than or into something that you didn't think it could be is, is. Not that you didn't think it could be, but you know, just
yeah,
something else, something greater, you know.
Oh yeah.
I think that's the feeling. But yeah, it's really awesome because, again, we were just talking about insecurities and really putting yourself out there in a vulnerable way. It's definitely very scary. Like I said, back then I was working with a lot of other artists, so this takes me back to LA. This is 2019 going into 2020, and we all know what happened there. I was running a studio out of my apartment. I was running sessions and whatnot with a bunch of people. And when COVID hit, everything had to shut down, couldn't record people anymore. Because we're a business, you can have people, because if someone got sick, it could definitely be a real issue.
Problem.
Especially being in California, and you know how they dealt with it. Yeah. So they were very, very strict on things. So it was me in the apartment. I had a part-time job, and I was just there creating, and I was, recording my own demos. I was kind of starting to write for the first time, trying to, get into it a bit, and, had a bunch of demos, and eventually got to a point where I would just send them out to different artists, and someone would be like, hey, like, this is cool, I'll do it, I'll just give me a couple days to record it, and I'll send it back to you. And a lot of them never got back to me. But yeah, so I had this stack of demos, and it kind of accrued over a period of a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I started sending them to people, like just to friends and things, like, hey, like, what do you think about the song? And they're like, oh, like, this is a really good song, like, who is that? And like, oh, it's me. And it was the first time people I listened to it and be like, hey, like, I actually like this. You know, you can do something with it. So, yeah. And another thing I had heard around that time, it's crazy how timing works out, but I'm sure you guys are familiar with The Dream, the artist and songwriter. Mm. I didn't know this, but his first album was an album that he had written that he was shopping to other people, but no one wanted to do it. You know,
wow.
And he just dropped the demos that he had of himself on it, you know, and it changed his life.
Wow.
And, you know, I was at a point where I was looking at what I had and I was like, you know, I like some of these, you know, I don't really like some of the other ones, but I'm just going to take a risk and I'm just going to drop them all and see what people say. You know, and I dropped one at a time and, you know, I was getting a lot of reception from it. And, yeah, that's kind of how I transitioned into just being an artist. You know, it wasn't anything I had intended. But it just kind of happened, you know?
Wow.
So we have a comment from Chris. They inspire you, then you inspire them. Tone and rhythm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very true.
Yeah, that's...
I love it.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I think is important, you just never know how life will turn out and how things will happen for you. And if we were to ask you, you know, when you're around 10 or 15 or no, not 10 or 15, but 10 to 12 or something, did you think that you'll be doing what you're doing today?
Absolutely not. I don't think I had a musical bone in my body. You know,
it was all about hooping.
Yeah, my earliest music memory was, you know, when my stepdad he bought me a guitar when I was like seven for like Christmas or something like that. And you know, he was always very heavily into music, and he was a great musician. And you know, he taught me a couple things. I was pretty big on the Jonas Brothers back then. I was like 8 or 9, so I was like really trying to learn all their songs and stuff. And then eventually, I just put that down. Just to, you know, go the sporting route, you know, because it was one of those things like, hey, did you practice today? Did you practice today? It's like, no, Dad, I didn't practice today. Like, I'm, you know, so, you know, eventually left me alone about it. You know, so just from then on, I never thought about doing music, never even once considered it to be a serious thing until I went and DJed with you that one day. And for some reason, something about that really
just,
it's
a bug, man. It's a bug.
It just struck a chord in me. Yeah. You know,
it's worse than COVID.
Yeah. So, did you learn how to play any instruments or drum machines or anything when you're producing? Did you learn any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah. A really cool thing that I started doing during my touring stint was I started doing live performances and recording them. And I got this from this DJ from the East Coast. His name's DJ Inferno. I don't know if he's very well known or not. I don't think he was. Mm-hmm. You guys should check him out. But he used to post these videos on YouTube. He would have a drum machine and he would have like a turntable and a mixer, and he would just like chop songs up just live, like just doing his own crazy thing with it. I'm like, this is insane. I've never seen anything like this before.
Mm-hmm.
So he would get the drum machine and you know, he would kind of chop stuff up. I mean, you guys have to check it out. It's DJ Inferno with the E. I think he's from Virginia, but yeah, I just saw that and I was like, I got to do that. So then I ended up getting this machine drum kit, from Complete Audio, I think, or whatever company makes that. Mm-hmm. And you know, I was in my mom's kitchen and I got these softbox lights from my stepdad, cause he used to help with video for the church. I put them up in the kitchen and I had my DJ controller on the island. I actually have a video on my Instagram at like towards the bottom, you could see. But I had my DJ controller and my laptop, and I would just do crazy mixes, and I would use the pad and kind of like really get into it like that.
I remember that.
Yeah, yeah, man. Yeah. So
COVID and times just created so many different things that were so cool. People just outside the box. Okay, I'm getting out the box. I'm gonna do something nobody else has thought of. Or you get inspired by somebody else. I'm gonna put my own spin on it. Do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as far as instruments, yeah, I dove back into guitar at a point. You know, one of my good friends was one of the most talented musicians I've ever met. You know, he really showed me a lot of things that kind of helped me, you know, recognize the patterns a lot better. And I was able to learn it pretty quickly. So I got pretty good at guitar and piano as well. But those are really just the main two that I used to produce with.
Wow.
I don't really do too much.
But to think you went from wanting to dribble a basketball for the rest of your life to now music is your life, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know if I would say I wanted to do basketball for the rest of my life, but I mean, it was definitely. You know,
we have an inspiration to go further and further. We all want to see ourselves, you know, now in the starting lineup for the Los Angeles, Dallas Mavericks, whoever, you know.
Absolutely. And I remember my sophomore year, you know, because, you know, after basketball season, they put you in the off season. You got to do a bunch of stuff you don't want to do.
Yes.
And it was like, I'm not
feeling this.
I'm not coming back next year. You know, took all the fun out of it. I'm like, DJing is way more fun than this, you know, and I can get paid for it. Yeah, no, I'm not going to sit here and get yelled at.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, hey, we never know our path. And that was a cool turn, a U-turn, a pivot or whatever. And thanks to Uncle Mike over there. He brought you into the world of
absolutely. DJ. Yeah.
So he got something here about how did it feel to do your first video? You did a video for one of your songs?
Oh, yeah. Which one was it? Cruise Control?
I can't remember it. Y'all were
at the beach? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's actually my third video.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
But like my first like actual video, yes. My first video I'd ever put out was it was for the intro for my first mixtape called Preston Road Volume 1. That's what the mixtape was called. And the song was called Preston Road Flows. And it's funny because I was living in Houston at the time. And, you know, me and one of my buddies were just driving down the street and we saw this park. And I was like, I just want to go shoot a video over there, you know, for this song or whatever. So I literally just got a basketball. You can look it up on YouTube right now if you want. It's so corny. I had like a Luka Doncic jersey on.
Luka in Houston at all places.
Yeah, and I had a durag on, and I was just like dribbling the basketball for part of it, and just rapping at the park from different shots with an iPhone. Put that out, and you know that was my first video. But to answer your question, because I know you're talking about Cruise Control, I think that was one of my favorite times in my career, just because I think it was my first time actually.
It was a nice video and a nice song as well.
Yeah.
So did you produce the video or did you have somebody?
So I actually had a guy, Marcos Locos Films. He's based out of Houston. He's from Arizona.
Shout out to Marco.
Yeah, Marco yeah. Gone Loco. That's my guy. But yeah, I called him because he was in the Houston area, and I wanted to do it in Galveston. I wanted because the song is a very like bubbly like poppy type song, so uh-huh. I was like, I gotta do this at the beach, right? I saw it in my head. I was like, I gotta get the Jeep or the Bronco. We ended up getting a Bronco, and I was like, we gotta drive down the beach and do this. I'd be like, it'd be really cool to do this in Texas though, you know, because I don't want to go somewhere else, you know. I'm from here, I'm from Texas. So I was like, let's go do this in Galveston. So, you know, I called him out. He really knocked it out of the park, you know. I had some friends come, I got this Airbnb, so it was my first time actually doing something a little bit higher budget, you know, coming out of my pocket. You know, it felt really good, man. Like it's funny being a DJ because I don't really like having a lot of eyes on me, you know, and like being an artist too. It's
it's so weird. Yeah. Why are people like that?
I don't know.
But you love the attention, but you don't want people looking at you.
Yeah. It's very weird. It's a very weird dynamic.
It really is.
It's like, yeah. It's because I've been the same way since I was a kid. Like birthday parties, always just awkward for me. People staring at you saying happy birthday. Like it's just, you know, it never really. But
when you were DJing for the influencers,
They were the main thing. I was kind of in the back.
But I mean, you told me people hollering at you. Hey, Jalen. Oh,
yeah. I mean,
that's different.
Yeah, that is different. They already got their mind made up, you know?
It's the same thing, though.
I'm just saying, that's fuel to the fire, though.
Okay, yeah, all right. So, but if you're just DJing and nobody else around.
Just imagine this, Jeff. You're DJing and you look up and you make eye contact. And y'all just, you know, they gauging in your eyes like, dude, stop looking at me.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just weird. I think that's something that's always been in my nature, but I think it is something that I've learned to grow out of. But I definitely think, you know, that's something that was rooted in me. But to answer your question, I mean, it felt really good just to know that like everyone's here because of me and they want to support me, and they're here because of something I created.
Did you do a release party and all of that good stuff, or you just
for the album? I did.
Okay.
For the album I did. That was also really cool.
So by the age of 25, he is DJ for influencers, traveled, been flown around, you know, to be a DJ at a very young age. Mm-hmm.
Made his own
lived in LA, lived in Houston, made mm-hmm. an album, produced, you know, all kind of stuff. So what do you want to do now? What's next for you? What's the next thing you're trying to do?
Well, I told you guys this off the camera, but I do have another album that's completed that I do plan on putting out here sometime soon. It's a collaborative album with some guys out here, Arthur Black and Jay Love. But yeah, I was thinking about this other day, and I really think, you know, out of everything that I've done, out of all the verticals I've experienced and worked in, I think production is really where, you know, my heart is.
So if we have any people out there who think they got a little talent and would like to meet up with Jalen and get a little production work in, look him up. We'll drop all this stuff, but we'll get all of that to the end. But
yeah, I appreciate that. But yeah, I mean, I think just being in the studio, being able to create, being able to work with, you know, a crazy amount of people and, you know,
well, I work with one every day. read that question on the screen, sir, if you can read that, or read it on Mike's screen.
Have you ever heard the term do boy?
That's him being funny.
No, it's serious, though.
Have no, it's not. That, it's
have
not.
You ever heard that term?
I have, but I don't know what it means.
See?
That is interesting.
You are not my where new favorite you, interview of all
where,
time.
Where did you do you recall where you heard that?
No, I don't.
Oh,
it
wow.
sounds familiar. Is it like a popular term?
Well, no, I'm not, just really, explain, not in Mike's eyes.
I'm gonna explain something to you, and you tell me where do you put this on the side of positivity or negativity?
Why am I nervous? What is it?
No, it's so funny. Don't worry.
So
about it.
Back in the South, Mississippi.
This is not a Mississippi thing.
Okay, South.
Okay, all right, go ahead.
South. they refer the guys that help them help DJs as do boys.
Take your stuff into the club and all that.
Okay. Dude, no, that was me.
See, see, Mike, he understands it. He gets it. See,
so
is it like derogatory?
I'm just
Mike
just
thinks
think about
it is.
It.
If, it's not really derogatory.
Okay, well, let me put it this way: if I say do boy Jalen, come here.
But you don't say that to people.
Yeah.
It's so just, if let me ask you this. If this is something that you're referring to people,
you don't refer to them as that.
Between me and you, Jeff is a do boy.
I don't know if I'm gonna be sitting in the middle of this.
So I'm just saying, but we're not gonna call him that. But he's a do boy to us.
No,
so I just don't see where.
So this is what I told Mike. You know, the guys used to help me tote all my records in the clubs. We called them do boys because they would come and help. They wanted to get in the club, so they would. We just called them. I mean, we didn't say that to them, but we just said, "Hey, the do boys," whatever the case was. And I don't even know where I got the term.
Logan, bus boy and do boy is two totally different things. Bus boy. Or is it okay to say bus boy Logan or do boy Logan? Which one would you?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so.
But I'm just saying, is this a term
since this came out in a conversation with someone else in another show, Mike has always tried to use.
I don't know.
But he's actually heard it, Mike, and he's 25 and young and Texas, and he hadn't been to Mississippi.
I think he's
thinking about it, though. Listen to what he thinks now.
I think you got to look at it like this. It's like if someone asks you what you do, and let's say you're a do boy. You're not going to tell them I'm a do boy. You're going to be like,
say you're a roadie or a grip or something.
Something like that. Same thing with the bus boy. Like when someone asks what you do, you can be like, oh, I wash dishes over at. I'm not going to say I'm a bus boy.
I work at.
But see, with the do boy, they don't even know that they're being referred to as do boy.
Oh.
You get it?
Well, they do because
we're not going to tell Jeff he's a do boy.
Why not?
I mean, but you might have heard it. Somebody said
before. If I say do boy Jeff on the mic, where you at? Do boy Jeff.
I'm gonna sling a record up there.
Exactly.
But I mean, it's not a term. You just said it in like working circles. I mean, you know, I don't even know,
you know
where it came from.
Just think about what you said, working circles. That sounds so working circles.
Okay, off the do boy. Stop. You had your fun. You love messing with me about that, man. Oh, man. Okay, now we'll ask this one. What is something that you think we can do without in the DJ industry?
Do without?
Yes. Mm. Something you don't like about it, or something you would change if you could, or require anything?
That's a good question.
we go deep here.
Logan said Du Bois sounds like someone that will get things done.
I mean, he's got a point. He's got a point.
That's my boy Logan. Yeah. Logan, stop, man. Yeah. Stop.
Crystal said,
I'm his Chris Jalen.
Oh, yeah. Ha ha, Jalen. I mean, ha ha, Logan. Yeah.
I forgot the question.
Oh, yeah.
What can we do without?
Yeah, what can we do without, man? Something that you think the industry can do without.
Du Bois.
I don't know if this, I don't think this is something that can change or will change, but I will say just being, I don't know the word, I guess being undercut for a gig, if that's the word.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like,
please define.
Like, for example, it's like, you know, you want to do a gig, right? Let's say it's a festival or let's say it's a party or something you really want to do. You want to get exposure, you want to get experience, whatever. I mean, people obviously take advantage of that. You know, these people are in the business of making money.
Oh, you're talking about promoters and people like paying you $250 to travel to Orlando.
No, 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 no.
Or $500.
I'm not talking about that. No, but that's we need more of that.
No, but I mean, but
yeah.
But I understand what you're saying. But I'm saying, like, if you feel like someone's trying to get over because they know you really want to do it, is that what you mean?
Partially. Like, I was at this. I know. If you really want to do something and you know your worth, let's say, hey, man, I charge $250 for this. And they're going to be like, no, I'll just get someone else to do it for free because I know someone else really wants this spot.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And there's a lot of times in the industry where I made those concessions where it was like, hey, I want this much. And they're like, hey, well, we're not going to give you that much. But I knew like I really wanted to do it. So now I'm in a dilemma. It's like, do I stick to my guns and be like, no, I'm worth this much for my time to come out here and present myself and show myself so you could put my name on your lineup and whatever.
Oh, man, that,
but
that,
it's like, I also want to go connect with these artists. I want to go and hang out with these people. I want to go experience this. I want to just travel here, you know, and some people won't even pay for your flight. You know,
so
it's like,
I have to dig a little deeper. So how could we get rid of that? How can we get rid of that?
That's why I prefaced it with.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, I was like, I don't think that's something. I think there's always going to be that vacuum of, here, I'll say this. I'll say this. I know you. There's a way you can eliminate that for yourself, and that's by being valuable, being able to create more value, not just with your talent, but with your name and with your brand.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's one of the things that changed the game for me because people wanted me because they knew that I had DJed for these tours before, and they knew that people knew who I was, and they knew. Those people would show up because they knew who I was, not because I was a great
still
DJ.
Trying to lowball you too, even though with all of that behind you,
absolutely. Yeah. And some people did, and some people didn't.
Yeah,
you know. But I'm just saying, as an example, I'm sure that happens to way more people. I'm sure that happens way more often to other people than it did for me, just because I had built.
It happens to everybody.
Because
everybody,
you know, if I have 300,000 followers on Instagram. You know, you're going to want me at your club or you're going to want me at your party because, you know, I'm going to bring that value and you're going to pay me what I say I want to be paid, you know. But if it's like, hey, I got, you know, 2000, I've done a couple local gigs, you know, I'm good, but I want $1,000 for or $500 for this gig or whatever. And they're just gonna be like, well, no, I'm just going to get this guy because he says he'll do it for 250, you know, and he's all right. He's been here before.
That is a great. Know? Topic for for a full discussion,
but
because how do you? I don't know how we beat that.
Well, I have an
you know idea. Your worth, but if you really want to do something, say we both have examples of that early this year that has happened to. Well, I know it's happened to me this year, but it won't ever again.
Yeah, and I think what's important is the only way, in my opinion, that something like that could happen is. We have to have everybody more on one accord because if the person that you're saying that, oh, I know such and such would do it for this amount. If everybody is standing on the same beliefs in like what Chris say, know your worth.
Yeah, but okay.
But the problem.
Yeah.
Let me finish. The problem is, it's just like. You look at the NBA. You look at the NBA today and you look at the NBA 20 years ago.
Okay.
The pay is so different. And you got people constantly coming in. like with the DJing, you got people coming in that are just starting up. And they're $200 to them is like, whoa.
Yeah, just like me. They're willing to do anything. They're willing to do stuff for free just to get the opportunity to show. And, you know, yeah. And that's always going to be a thing. You're not going to get rid of that, which is why I was like, the best thing you can do is enhance that for yourself. You know, LeBron's going to be able to negotiate what he wants and they're going to pay it for him because he has that value. You know, a rookie in the NBA can't say, hey, I want $30 million a year unless he brings in that value. You know, if he brings in that value, he's got that brand locked in. He's going to make the company this amount of money. You know, that's what's going to happen. So if you're a DJ and you know you could put people in that room, they're going to do it every single time. If they're in there buying alcohol, if they're in there, especially if they're girls, you know, bringing the guys.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I would say. That's just increase your value.
Really deep. Well, you know your value, but the problem is there's so much secret negotiating too. You don't know.
People are not honest.
No, I'm saying you don't know. Yeah. Same thing with what happened to me earlier this year. They're negotiating with somebody else and asking me to do it for this, not telling me that they're negotiating because I could have said, well, just get him to go do it. So I'm thinking I'm the only one involved in the negotiation. So, but like you said, with the NBA, now it's different because almost everybody's salary is public. So you know what everybody's making. And then you know there's a set scale on what you can make. Okay, as a rookie, I can make, I'm going to make X millions.
Yeah.
And salary cap, you know, okay, either you're going to pay me the max or you know, I'm going to go somewhere else and get the max.
Yeah.
So we don't have that. If we had that, well, you would know, okay, well, I know Mike is going to ask for 10 million. I need 12, or I'll do it for, you know, whatever the case may be. If there was transparency between all of us, then like you said, but it's never going to happen because I really want to do it. So if Mike won't take 10, I'll take 9, you know? So,
oh yeah. It's hard.
Yeah. But Chris, it's not a bad thing. It's just, they play us against each other and we fall for it every time instead of saying, okay, no, this is what I want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Chris said, be like everybody else or be different. Different makes you money. Or your fame. It's your choice.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point.
Totally,
Chris.
Agree.
Yeah.
And it's,
that was probably one of the best answers toughest answers we ever had for toughest answers we ever had for that particular question. That's deep right there. Yeah. I like that. Stop getting, but you're getting undercut by the people that's paying you. It's not like your competition is, they're doing it to you too, but they don't know they're doing it to you because they're pitting you against that other microphone over there.
And I think in those situations, you just got to focus on what you can control.
Yeah.
And that's how much work you put in, how much you make yourself different. You know, like I explained with that DJ Inferno guy, like he really had to get creative and people are bringing him out just so he can do all that crap live. And they will make sure he's there and they will pay him what he wants because they want him there.
Look at the sicko mode. The guy that did the song, the mashing up, the guy with the mask on.
I'm not familiar.
You ain't never heard. Well, we'll look it up after the show. But there's other DJs like Oh Boy that was doing the mashup with all the artists, and he was,
for sure.
And we have a DJ in our realm, Brandon Brown. He has an alter ego, DJ Kung Fu. And people are flying
the Kung Fu.
The
DJ.
Kung Fu. People are flying him all over the place. You know, he plays and he does karate moves and stuff.
He's
making a separation, but then he doesn't even promote that
because he works for another company.
Yeah, he works for other companies. Only time he does it is for other DJs in front of us at conferences and stuff. So, you know, it's a lot of stuff, man, that you can do to separate yourself.
Yeah. And I'll just end it. I'll end up. Point with this is just like, if you aren't willing to do that, I mean, you're just leaving yourself up to, I mean, whatever the person wants to pay.
Yeah,
at that point,
absolutely.
You know,
and I mean, sometimes they really can't afford it, but you know, hey, if you act, but like I tell a lot of people, if they pick up the phone and call you, they want you. Now it's up to you to get what you want.
Yeah,
absolutely. Always.
Yeah, always.
So
yeah,
with that said, what is something you love about the industry?
Is the music industry in general?
Yeah. Yes. He came with a softball there. Go ahead.
It's called a curve.
I think one of the biggest things I love is being able to connect with people all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Creating art and sharing your genuine experiences in your life with people. You know, when I dropped this album this past September and until next time, you know, I was looking at some analytics. You know, I see people listening all the way in you know, Finland, India, South Africa, Thailand, China, Russia, Singapore,
yep,
Australia. You know, I see people streaming the songs in these areas. I see people posting stories. You know, I got fans in Germany, Norway, like, you know, just seeing that and seeing people sing along to them with their friends.
Yeah.
Is just, you know, I don't, again, I think that's one of those feelings where it's like indescribable.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's just one of the main things that I love. I think that's one of the biggest reasons why I do it. Just being able to see that and see an impact in other people's lives. And you guys know, as a DJ, when you play a song that people haven't heard and, you know, 20 years, 10 years, and you see that light that comes into their eyes, you know, I want to be able to do that for people at some point, you know, whether it's a beat I made or, you know, even a song I mixed or wrote or even sang myself. So, you know,
man, you can tell when it's a good show. It's past time and we didn't even notice that it's 8:35. But I mean, we don't put any limits on it, but we try to do an hour and not hold people time, be respectful. Oh, but sure. Here's a good one, and I'm going to take this one. What is a gem that you would leave our audience with, share with our audience, a gem that you would share with people?
I'll just say this for me. One of the biggest things for me was being open-minded and just saying yes to things.
Uh-huh.
You know, that one day when my stepdad was like, hey, you want to try to learn DJing or whatever? If I didn't say yes to that, if I wasn't open to just trying something,
you'd be somewhere.
I would be in a completely different place in my life. I'd be a completely different person.
Probably
a
chemist.
Yeah, no lie. Like, I would have been engineer, so. I would have been a completely different person, you know, if you know, if I was, you know, trying to learn how to DJ and, you know, my pastor called me and said, hey, you want to DJ for the youth church in the morning? And I said, I don't really want to, I don't have any Christian music. You know, that's kind of lame. You know, I don't want to wheel this giant thing up the stairs at this movie theater and, you know, sit there and play for like 15 minutes before and after, and then wheel it all the way back and take it all. You know, like, I could have said no to that very easily. Okay. You know,
so that's a great clip. Those last two questions would be great clips to pull from this show, because that's a good answer, because you got to be open to doing things and not closed-minded, because you never know what door it might open for you or what it's going to.
Absolutely.
Man, just think, if you would have never met Mike and never went and heard him DJ for Booker T.
No, absolutely.
You know, that is. Wow. I think that guy influenced you, man.
I would say that that's probably the biggest turning point in my entire life, I believe.
Wow.
Just at any point in my life. I think that's the biggest pivot I've ever had in my life. I do want to say thank you to you, Mike.
Do we have a clap, a cheer?
Hey, I'm just grateful,
you just
that, Mike. You know, I'll say this, and I think this is for all of us.
Uh-huh.
Listening, who will listen later, you never know what your walk will do for somebody else. You know, years ago, someone told me this. They said, life is like a movie. The camera is always rolling.
Always.
So stay
ready.
And ready. Stay in character.
Yeah,
stay. Be what you are, because it's, you know, we're always influencing.
Yeah.
Even whether we want to or not.
Yeah.
And I'm just grateful.
Yeah. One of my basketball coaches used to always tell us, little eyes are always watching.
Always.
You know? Yeah. And it was just one of those moments, you know, we would be playing in front of, you know, the middle schoolers and elementary schoolers, but it just translates to life. It's like, you know, someone's always watching you, paying attention.
And I'm just messing with you, man, because Mike has poured so much into me. Even when we met a few years ago, I feel like we both poured into each other, but it's just I see him pouring into people and trying to help people just like I do. So I think that's why we hit it off so well. But it's great to know. I got to find one of my DJs I train now. So since he
make it a series.
Yeah, go find a Du-Boy.
Yeah, find there a Du-Boy.
Yeah,
there you go.
You might have to go to my
real
deep
quick,
down into the
real quick before we get out of here. Do we have any questions for Jalen? And go ahead and tell them how they can find your stuff while we wait to see if anybody has any questions.
Yeah, you can find me anywhere, any social media, Instagram, Facebook, Spotify, Apple Music. Google. It's just my name, Jalen Fryer. They cut out J A L E N F R Y E R. There's no Y in Jalen. So you guys can just look me up that way. Please just hit me up, shoot me a follow. I'll shoot you a follow back. You know, we could chop it up.
Yeah, do that. And I remember you provided my wife with some of your tracks, and she actually has some of your tracks playing on some of her video.
Yeah.
Wow.
For sure. Yeah.
I'm going to go look some stuff up and definitely check him out. See, Mike, he always throws curveball. He'll bring people in I don't know nothing about, and then he'll have all the information. We'll show up for the show. He wrote all these softball questions.
Wow.
And he just, it makes it all about him. And then I sit over here and look like I'm the bad guy if I accident. Wow. But I'm just kidding.
I love the conversation. I mean, I definitely love to come back too. Like, we could talk about so much up here. You
know? Yeah. Definitely got to talk about that lowball thing again.
We're going to do a 5 series on Du Bois.
Why?
Du Boisism.
I'm going to have to find somebody that actually knows what that term means and that actually where I got it from.
I hope it's nobody that you refer to that we're going to have security. It might be a fight.
Oh, my gosh.
You called me what?
No, boy. It's somebody I actually got it from. It does sound horrible when you think about
it. I know it do. I've been telling you that.
I don't call anybody that anymore. I call everybody roadies, man. But
I'm just saying,
back in the day, that's
Du Bois.
Hey, Du Bois.
I told you.
I need you to bring that crazy record.
It sounds like a slave term.
It does.
No, it does not. It's just bad. It sounds horrible. Like what?
When you put a name to it, it sounds bad.
Yeah,
Du Bois Jim.
I wouldn't like it.
Yeah, but see, he's heard it, but he didn't know exactly where it came from.
He didn't know the history.
Yeah, there is no history. It's just but all right. Do we have any questions? If not, we're gonna go ahead and get on out of here. And oh my goodness, I need more love
Crystal
too.
She needs more.
I got you. All right, I got you, Miss Crystal. Yeah.
So how long do you think before you're gonna release the new album?
It's still TBD. Like I said, I got one in the books right now. I think I just need a little bit more time to kind of have the release the way I want it to be. Okay.
Right. Can you sometime do this when you get ready to release it? Can you maybe jump on one Monday morning one morning with us?
We do a
morning
release show.
So we could jump on and play a few tracks.
And
people get a sample of what you're doing.
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
Let's do that. So that way we'll know when it comes out so Crystal can make sure she gets her copy of the album.
Oh, she's going to do that.
I know anyway, but, you know, at least we'll know for sure he released it. So, all right, man.
Yeah, you guys can find all my music and stuff.
Jalen.
Under my name.
Right.
On your favorite streaming platform.
Yes. Not DJ for Sean.
Another great guest that Mike has found for us.
Wow.
I mean, you've had some great guys. The other guy who's a producer, songwriter, he was really good.
Oh, yeah. Crystal were in an Uber.
And they met somebody in an Uber, man. He brought him in the studio. Wow.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, when we go out of town, there's no telling what hole or what what Du Bois Mike is doing while I'm trying
Du Bois
to do
Mike.
No, so like, man, we're in Chicago now. We get ready to sit down with somebody, get ready to interview somebody. I'm sitting here for an hour. Mike is nowhere to be found. He is somewhere looking at new products. Don't text me. Don't call me and say, Jeff, come check this out. He down there taking in all the fun. And
I got kidnapped.
No, you didn't, Mike. Your phone still works.
Look, I'm on my way to down the hallway, and I got grabbed.
Okay.
And took downstairs to a little back
private room. Yeah.
Private room.
I'm going to need some context, Mike. What's going on?
I'm just saying they were showing
me a DJ
equipment.
Show. And he told me. And so they had this new booth with video wall in and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for Mike. Cool. I know it's cool, but okay, you're supposed to text your partner.
Like, ain't shoot a text or something?
Yeah. So I'm sitting up here waiting with people to interview, and Mike is somewhere in the closet.
I got caught up.
I know. But he does it every time we go somewhere. So maybe in Vegas, I'm going to put a tracker on him so I know where he's.
A little air tag.
Yeah.
In his back
I'm gonna
pocket.
Put a towel on you while we
I'm
go.
Just saying, hey, I'm bringing back content. I'm bringing back goodies like
no, Sam. So he did it again in Boston. But this interview was so good, I forgave him for everything he did before. So he went and met the guy that did Rain. He invented the first controller. he's
oh, that's cool.
I mean, it was, man, this guy was, I was like, I wanted to kidnap him and take him. Because, I mean, he was telling us about, he called Serato and told him, hey, let's put Serato in a controller. What do y'all, man.
NS71.
Man, he was.
Wow.
The movie, he was that guy.
He was the first person that actually created a controller with movement.
So Mike has the freedom to go do it one more time because he got Chris. But after that, his reign is over. So, but I know it's going to happen in Vegas. I'm not even worried about it. I know we'll have an interview schedule.
Yeah. What's up in Vegas?
We have it's a DJ conference we're going to called
that we were invited
Mobile
to.
Entertainment Expo. So
cool.
We'll be out there in February the 19th to the 22nd doing the show live. You ought to come out one day. Yeah.
I'll check it out. I'll look into it.
Listen, they have several ones. We're going to Chicago again.
In June.
You need to go to one.
Yeah. And then we're going to the Harvest Sound in Boston. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And the numbers and how you think about things, they'll give you a different perspective.
Yeah. Not just because you don't, just with what you do, you don't know who you're going to bump into.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's always them doors.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Take us home, Mike. Take us out of here. Good night, everybody. God bless. And we'll see y'all Thursday morning for the, what is the rewind? What do we call
Thursday rewind.
Rewind. Okay. Yeah. Okay, we got to change the name. I don't like that.
Duboy lost his body.
Duboy Rewind.
Yeah. Duboy Rewind with Jeff. Duboy Jeff.
Oh, I'm getting the shirt, but I can't. I need to cross it out. Duboy. I'm gonna get it crossed out or something.
Oh, you're gonna get Duboy crossed out and then put Jeff.
No, Brody.
No.
I could be like, you're not allowed to say this word anymore.
Come on, take us out, man. Let's go home.
Okay, Duboy Jeff out of here. Bye.